24 hours a day, 7 days a week. On demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can do nothing about it. BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked. Keep it locked. Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.
Welcome to Rethinking Mental Health, Episode 1, with JC Mears on Bashani Radio out of New York City. Always talking about everything. We can be heard on iHeart and iTunes and Spotify and everywhere a podcast is played. So, guys, it gives me great pleasure to talk about Rethinking Mental Health. As I said before, my name is JC Mears. That's my I'm affectionately known as JC Mears, but my real name is Janelle Chase Mears. And I'm a systemic creative therapist and a mental health consultant based in Barbados and New York. I've been in the mental health field for the past 15 years, specializing in the fields of women and men's addiction, grief and loss, and interpersonal relationships. I'm also a strength and conditioning and mental skills trainer, and I'm committed to fusing how the mind and the body works to create cohesive thinking and movement. For me, one of the reasons that I got into the mental health field was actually by accident. I attended the University of Louisiana at Monroe in 2000 and completed my first degree in 2003 in psychology, and my second degree, my master's, is actually in marriage and family therapy, which is an element of systemic thinking and cybernetics of cybernetics. And I really just got into it because I did not want to return back home to Barbados without having a master's or having a platform that I could actually be productive in my home island of Barbados. But when I got to Barbados in 2005, when I returned home, my first introduction into mental health floored me. I never knew that Barbados had such an extensive drug problem, referencing cocaine, crack cocaine. People think, you know, you're from the islands, all y'all do smoke weed there. But really and truly, it was watching and understanding how crack cocaine actually impacted the lives of Barbadian citizens and by extension, how it impacted their families. And it was at that point that I made a commitment that I wanted to understand, learn, and share more about mental health. I stayed in that field for about 12 years, and the experience that I had, I've seen growth in over 500 clients. I've worked with over 300 families. I was actually the pioneering factor of the Family Therapy Center at one of the places that I worked with regards to addiction. And eventually, I was actually lead coordinator in one of our main residential treatment facilities in Barbados, solely for women. So as I said, my journey really opened up as I made the commitment to give and to serve my clients in the Barbados population. As I grew in my field, I also had the opportunity to be married and to have a child. And that's the point where my life actually changed. Now, I know I sound young, and I'm just going to age myself as I'm introducing myself to my listeners. I'm actually 38 years old, but what happened when I turned 27 changed my life completely. I remember leaving college in 2005 and making a pact with myself. By 27, I was going to be married, I was going to have a child, and I was going to have this wonderful career. But for some reason, my life never went past 27. I would repeat those things over and over. And one of the things that you guys will learn about me there is power in the tongue. And I kept saying that, and it was so interesting that at 27, I had my first child, but what I did not know that was about to happen was that I was going to also lose my husband in the same breath. So while my son was 4 weeks old, my husband actually collapsed and died 2 weeks later of an asthma attack. And anyone who knows me, and as my listeners, you guys will get to know me very well, that changed my life to be passionate about grief, recovery, and loss. And it started to fuse the way in which I started to think about mental health. Because here I was, a 27-year-old widow with a newborn baby working in a mental health facility. Whew, that's a lot. And I had to show up every single day for those clients and their families. And there were many days and many nights that I could not do that. And one of the things that opened up my eyes to understanding how mental health really does impact your day-to-day experiences was just the feeling of loss and complete numbness. Because when you've lost something at the magnitude that I had lost, not that there was not a will to live, but there was only a will to survive. And I have a saying, you know, we survive, live, and thrive. And in 2007, my life between 2007 and 2010 or 2012 was really about survival. How do I stay above water? How do I begin to be a mother to a son who I did not even think about just being and I don't like to use the word single mother, just being a mother without a husband? That blew my mind. And I had to kind of figure out what I was going to do, how I was going to get help, who was going to be able to support me. Life has its way of changing. And one of the things that I've learned along my journey is once you understand what your mental health brings, you will be able to survive for a moment and you will be able to transition into living. So as I was only surviving, trying to be above water, thread water dangerously, I learned a lot of things about myself. One, my ability to share my emotions was very, very strong and very, very dominant and very, very needed. I worked in a facility where I worked with social workers, addictions counselors, psychiatrists, psychologists, nurses, recovery support people. And I will never forget the clients that I worked with. Well, what it did was set up a perfect petri dish of being able to express how I felt about situations on a day-to-day basis. There was never a time that I could not be honest in my setting. And I thank the Lord every single day that I had that opportunity. Because as I told my mentor at the time, if in 6 months I did not lose my mind after my husband died, I was never going to lose it. I had made a decision and a pact with my higher power that I was going to be able to process it and by extension be able to help others. Fast forward 5 years later and working in the recovery center, I really began to focus on how families impacted the way in which our addicts recovered. But it wasn't only about addicts for me. That was the setting that I was working in. But it was also about my own family experiences. And I have to tell you guys, I don't come from the hunky-dory, white picket fence, 2.5 baby. I come from a family where my grandfather had 17 children. I know some of my aunts and uncles. My mom and my dad weren't together, but my dad lives in the States. So I kind of did the 3 months vacation everywhere and stayed in Barbados for 9 months. So my family life is very colorful. That's what I like to say. And obviously that definitely impacted the way in which my mental health was. But every time I spent with family members, with my clients, I saw it so much clearer that we are the sum of the experiences that we pass on to our children. And having a child and having a child under the conditions that I had a child and had to raise a child, I became very aware of what it is that I needed to pour into him. You see, you'll learn a lot on my show, especially the fact that between the ages of 0 and 7, everything that a child needs to know in order to be successful in terms of emotional and mental regulation, that's when they have an opportunity to pass on. Everything else we're learning outside of our consciousness, which makes it really difficult for us to actually absorb the information because we're in crisis. So for me, it was an eye-opener in seeing how these families responded to their their loved ones who were addicts, and the necessity for me to teach my son the importance of emotionally regulating and sharing information. The name of my show is Rethinking Mental Health. And I really want us to stop for a minute and pause, because that's what I had to do at the age of 32. I really had to pause to see if this was the life that I wanted, because I no longer wanted to be a widow. I wanted to be Janelle. I wanted to be JC. I wanted to be somebody who was full of life and not just trying to swim, keep my head above water, and really engage with people and find a light and a purpose. And at that point, that's when I decided to get back into physical fitness. See, one little nugget that I didn't share is that I actually went to the University of Louisiana Monroe on a Division I scholarship. And boy, I will tell you, I'm really bad on volleyball court. But what that provided me was an opportunity to always have an outlet on the way I thought about things and the way in which I felt. And so after my husband died, I really didn't play much volleyball, but I decided that I was going to commit more into fitness. I love a gym, and eventually I actually opened my own gym, CrossFit 246. But at that time, I used the gym as an opportunity for mental growth. And there are a lot of people out there, Dr. Joe Dispenza, as well as Dr. Greg Braden, that talk about physical fitness as an entity to create shifts in your mood and the way in which you feel and the way in which you interact. To the point where now I'm actually my fourth year PhD student in creative systemic studies, focusing on how fitness influences interpersonal relationships. So in 2012, 2013, I made a conscious decision to begin working back out, changing the way in which my body looked, changing the way in which my body thought about situations, and actually engaging with people on a day-to-day basis. That was tough, because I had come from a world where my clients, my coworkers were the only people that I saw and engaged with on a very emotional and personal level, and that I really needed to shift into actually and what I call the real world, but a very misconstrued real world where we don't tap into our emotions and where we don't tap into the way we think about things and we don't tap into the way in which we engage with people. But I had to learn to actually get out there. And I had a joke. This is always my inside joke. If you don't leave home, the only people that you will be friends with will be the garbage man, the debt collector, and the postman. So I decided to branch out on my own in 2013 and actually engaged in the gym. And that shifted the way that I thought about things. And it also shifted the way in which I wanted to talk about grief and grief recovery. Because as a widow, I don't think people understand the amount of silence and isolation that I was in. And even though I was good at my job, I was not performing optimally. I would be tired. I would sleep. I would be able to disconnect in places that I did not need to disconnect. I was also, let's say, a little bit emotional and very aggressive when it came to anybody managing or dealing with grief. And I researched extensively ways in which I can help myself and by extension help my clients. And I stumbled across something called Certified Grief Recovery. And I paused that for a couple of minutes, aka a couple of years, because I always had the opinion that I needed to be better before I served the world. You guys will hear me often say that the world is my platform, because mental health is not a Caribbean thing. It's not a New York thing. It's not an American thing. It's a worldwide thing. And the more we connect and engage mentally and emotionally, the better our world will become. So I started to engage in fitness. And in engaging in fitness, I decided to open up my own gym. And you guys are probably wondering, rehab to gym? Yes, because the connection was there. One of the things that I found in working in a rehab is that in order for people to begin feeling better, they would always want to move. And they would want to run, and they would want to hike. Even though they were not capable of, it still made them feel better. And it dawned on me that if I was able to find a way to combine it, we could actually improve the way in which our clients actually stayed sober and actually connected to their families. So I forged my way into understanding more about fitness and eventually opened up CrossFit 246 in Barbados. And my focus on that was getting general population better. But what I found in those 3 to 4 years after 2013 is that people were not getting better. They just looked better. And if you know anything about disease and heartache and pain, and I'll use my experience in losing my husband, where he looked good, but that asthma attack indicated that there were so many other things that were going on. And so for me, I wanted to really focus when I opened the gym on helping people understand how their mental health can be improved by their physical fitness, because it had changed my life. It gave me life. It gave me spirit. It gave me connection. All the things that I totally believe that I lost when I lost my husband. It also gave me communication. And one of the things in mental health I've learned in my process is that isolation keeps you stuck. And boy, was I stuck for a few years. And I wasn't stuck in a way that I wasn't moving. I was stuck in a way that I was carrying my pain through my process. And that's the hardest part to swallow. Because when you continuously carry pain, you inflict pain on other people. I always tell myself, and I share with other people, and you guys will learn a lot about me, is that I was not the best mother. I was not the best mother in those years, but I knew and I understood the importance of sharing a good mental health perspective. Emotionally, I connected, but I also disconnected at times because in my mind, I did not have the partner that I wanted to have to help me in the concept of parenting, nor did I even conceptualize it, nor did I even want to conceptualize it. So as I engaged in fitness, my mantra was I was going to be fit in order to run around behind my son. And he is and was very active at the time. Understanding my mental health helped me to move from that survival to that living. When I actually opened up the gym in 2013, I began to live. And unfortunately, I was not living for me. I actually began to live for other people, which, by the way, takes a toll on your mental health. I took on more responsibility than I was willing to admit to bear. But the responsibility helped me to understand how to live, because now it was more about being able to service other people, even though it was my dream and it was my passion. And it was about being able to understand what their needs were. And if you come from my background where you work in a rehab, you understand people's needs, but you also turn that off when you go home. And I kind of had to figure out how to do that with the gym, because I couldn't turn it off because it was my business. And I would say it really did impact my mental health, because I could not create a clear-cut system of how to serve others and also serve myself in something that was passionate. As an entrepreneur, I learned so much about how that impacted my mental health. And this is coming from somebody who had no... I didn't want to be an entrepreneur going into mental health. I just wanted to serve. I just wanted to provide therapy for families. I just wanted to engage with people on a level that they did not need to suffer. And if they needed to suffer, you know, at least they had somebody helping them. But I learned that that's not what I wanted to do anymore, because one of the worst things we can do in mental health is give people information in crisis, because when we're in crisis, we do not think. When we're in crisis, we just want to be safe and we just want to be heard, and we don't know how to process things to change things. And it's only when we are back in our Maslow's hierarchy of needs of, you know, safety and trust and commitment is when we actually can shift from all our physiological needs, our food or water, our shelter, all of that is taken care of. That's when we can elevate to another level of self-actualization. So after running the gym for a couple of years, I ran myself ragged. And it wasn't the ordinary type ragged. It was I worked from 4:30 in the morning, plus, and did I forgot to mention, I actually ran the gym while working at the rehab, plus having two other jobs. A bit crazy, I would say, because we talk in mental health. But it was for a purpose, because one of the things, it wasn't for me to be busy. It was for me to engage and connect with people, which I am very grateful for that experience. But if I had to give advice on this very first Rethinking Mental Health show, it would be do not bite off as much as you think you can chew. Cut it into little slices and eat it. Because the danger in biting off so much was that I felt overwhelmed and I was very tired. And I would say that my mental health, even though it was never below a functioning level, the optimization started to drop. And so I had to make a very big decision in about 2016-17 to actually quit my job. And this was after getting the position of lead coordinator and organizing and creating a rehab for women, the first rehab in Barbados. And as I built that rehab and I led a staff of about 15 people for about 18 months, I recognized that I did not have another 10 years to give to the women of Barbados, because what I was given, I wanted to give to the rest of the world. What they were learning was something that I think the rest of the world needed, because I think I had learned that on my journey from 2007 all the way to 2013, and being able to connect to people and being able to be of service to people, but also being able to take care of self. Because as entrepreneurs and also as a female and women, we tend to do for everybody else and we tend to let ourselves go. And while my letting myself go did not come in the form of poor body image or overeating, what it did was come in the form of being extremely tired and able to actually connect on a level where I could see growth and passion. And in 2013 to 2017, I started to live. I started to come from out of that water, but also to learn so many things about me that were necessary for change. And even though change is not the easiest thing that we can do, it's the one thing that's constant. The way we look, the way we feel, the way we interact with people will always change, right? So for me, creating that shift of living was something that I needed, right? I needed to create that shift. And so in 2017, I resigned my job. I quit. I had no plan other than I wanted to do something called the Fit Chip Movement. And I worked on my website and I was like, okay, I'm going into this because I have to find a way to merge my fitness and my mental health together. And I wanted to educate people so they did not end up in the position that those women had ended up. And I became brave and bold in saying goodbye to something that had kept me stable for 12 years and really kind of catapulted my love for mental health and by extension, this show, Rethinking Mental Health. So in 2017, I let go of something that held me and I began to thrive. I began to focus on relationships that I did not knew existed that could look as good as they look. I became a better mother. I became a better friend. I became a better daughter. And one of the things is I became more visible. You see, working in a rehab has a way where you need to be very quiet and you do not have any type of presence, even down to how you dress, because I worked with all males. So I looked like a man literally in my dressing for years. Lost any type of, I would say, sensuality. And that's also one of the things that impacts your mental health. So in learning how to thrive and not having that burden of being quiet and very private, I was actually to share a lot more of me with people and hang out more. But I was also able to jump on the media platforms and begin sharing information that people did not have, that people needed. And one of the things, and this is where the rethinking mental health comes from, is that we have just accepted the way in which people think we ought to behave given our circumstances. Whenever I do lectures, and I teach as well, whenever I do lectures or I do speeches around the world, I always put my case study up. A 27-year-old newborn baby, 4 weeks old, husband dies at 6 weeks, has 4 multiple jobs. And I always ask people, how should this person be? And they would always say, well, that person is probably depressed. That person probably has anxiety. That person probably has low self-worth. I always agree with them on the low self-worth, because it's nothing like losing a husband who tells you you're beautiful every day and you miss it, right, for a couple of years. You kind of build yourself back up. But all the other things were not true. But society had told them that if you were to meet this person will look a particular way. And I was not that person. I struggled, but I did not struggle to the point where I could not function. And so rethinking mental health is really about helping people understand the nature and the science of your mind and your body and how that connection with other people can actually create a shift in your body, can actually create a shift in your performance and actually improve your lives. We live in a society where everything is about a disorder. But who's teaching us about the order? Who's teaching us about the way in which our mental health can actually impact the world? Who's teaching us about the way in which we are physically regulated, how our emotions are actually coming from within inside our body, and our bodies and our minds can actually create the chemicals, serotonin, and yes, we're going to get science-based and cortisol and all that stuff. But what we're also going to do is connect to people. Who's teaching us about connecting with people so we realize that, one, we're not alone, and two, even though we feel as if we're alone, there's always somebody willing to listen, willing to engage in with our mental health. Because for me, that's what kept me going. People's ability to be authentic and to connect. And to this day, those are my core values that hopefully as you guys listen to me, you will be able to see how being able to connect and being authentic can actually improve your mental health. So guys, I want to thank you guys so much for listening to my Rethinking Mental Health show on the Bashani Radio out of New York City. And remember to update your perspective in order to change your narrative.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.